Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel. And joining me in studio, I'm so honored to have Tim Tangblad here. Now, did I say your last name correctly?
Correct.
Okay, because honestly, I've been Jennifer Weigel to so many people, and I just didn't want to mess up Pastor Tim as you go when you're an alias, because you spent 35 plus years as a Lutheran pastor.
Yes.
So, you're retired. Mm-hmm. You're spiritual, damn it. Can I say that in your presence?
You can.
Okay, great. But I want to talk about your journey, because we met through a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a sentence that you usually start in a headline with a pastor.
No. Oh.
And I love that we met through a psychic, because you, as a pastor for years, decades, were questing. And you decided to absorb as much information as you could in every way possible, whether it was from Buddha or from, you know, Judaism or a psychic. And that's what I try to do in my world as well. I say, look, I'm not going to tell you what to believe. I'm going to present as much evidence as I can. And then we're going to gather it together and go from there. But you're compiling the works of a fabulous book right now, which I can't wait for it to be out, by the way. And I love one of the things that you write, that there is not one religious tradition or an individual in sole possession of the truth.
Yes.
Explain that one, Pastor Tim. Because I know a lot of Catholics that would disagree with you. And Lutherans and Presbyterians and Buddhists and everything else. Well, maybe not the Buddhists, but go ahead. Your quest for truth has been a long lifetime journey. And how are you on that quest?
I'm loving it.
Okay.
I've been on it all my whole life. Mm-hmm. But after about 29 years in into ministry, I started feeling an increased restlessness and this inner voice telling me that there's more and it's time for you.
Right.
And you are open. And all you have to do is pay attention.
Right.
And stay out of the way. And be open to whatever comes to you. Everything's been set up for you.
Mm-hmm. But you've been open for decades, and you were getting a nudge even when you were 40.
Yeah.
You write very candidly about this in your book, about how you were not feeling, you were depressed.
I was depressed,
And you went on meds. I mean, you do the path that a lot of people do when they're depressed, and you still weren't feeling the solutions were coming, did you?
Right. No. Yeah. No, I didn't. I knew there was something wrong with the system I was in.
Yeah.
A lot of things I loved about it.
Being a pastor.
Yeah, being a pastor. And my Lutheran church loved the people I knew and worked with, great people. But there was something not quite, there was a disconnect. And that goes way back to my seminary days. Oh, so we're talking like 40 years.
And you got your Master of Divinity.
Yep.
Took you 7 years, so you're a Master of the Divine.
I'm a Master of the Divine.
Okay.
Which is the
no
weird,
pressure, Tim.
The weirdest academic title in the world.
Yeah. But it took you 7 years to get that title, and by golly, you better wear it or monogram it on something.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I crammed 4 years into seven.
Perfect.
And had a lot of questions back then, too, and I couldn't really label what the question really was. And so I started on this journey at the age of 59, this new quest, and I've discovered everything in life begins with open.
Yeah.
Once you are there, then the good stuff starts happening.
And I love, too, you write about the history of the word religion. Mm-hmm. It is re and legio, which is Latin for ligaments.
Yes.
Which connects everything.
Exactly.
And yet religion separates everything.
It does.
Why are we doing this?
I know.
How did we get here?
I know. Religion is at its best when it does connect.
Mm-hmm.
And it does sometimes.
Yes.
But it's at its worst when it disconnects. I think one of my favorite teachers, Richard Rohr, says religion is both the best and the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very true. Hard to argue with that.
Mm-mm.
A lot of good things have come, but a lot of bad things. And so I just opened up, and stuff just started coming to me.
It's like your truth fork.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Like some people have a tuning fork. You've got a truth fork.
Yeah.
And everybody out there listening can relate to this. You know, it's your intuition when it's on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. It's like you just knowing there's some truth mm-hmm. to what you're hearing, what you're feeling. And when someone's talking and you know they're BSing you, you know it.
Yeah.
You can feel it. Nothing feels right. But your truth fork was on all cylinders for lots of stuff that was coming in, and not all of it was what you learned in divinity school.
No.
Or your Master of Divinity.
No, yeah. No. Mm-hmm. A lot of it wasn't.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the probably the funnest part of the journey was I was reading what I thought were new things to me. Mm-hmm. Buddha and all sorts of traditions and authors that I had never looked at before. Mm-hmm. And it was like coming home. There was something inside of me going, yes.
What were some of the passages that you had not heard that you can remember the core essence of?
Yeah, well,
that really helped you.
Well, I very quickly got into what some of the spiritual teachers call your true self,
mm-hmm.
Which is who you are in the divine and who the divine is in you.
Right.
That is your true self. And how lovely and beautiful your true self is. And I discovered what that true self already knows. It was constantly going, yes, yes, when I read a phrase or a word or hear somebody. I already know that. Mm-hmm. I already know that. That's true. That's true. Go with that. I'm loving this stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm waking up again. And it was awesome. The wisdom that my soul came into this world with. And in church, the world of church, we talk a little bit about soul. Mm-hmm. The word's mentioned once in a while. I think it's generally understood we have one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's never talked about in terms of what it is.
Okay.
And it's not talked about in terms of its importance in this life.
Right.
It's always something that, well, that's something that goes to heaven when you die.
And, oh, when you get there, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. The sin, you're all sinners. You'd have to address. Wait, I wrote it down, what you said. Where you literally, by our nature, we are sinful and unclean.
Yeah, I led a confessional rite for years. I said those words to people, and I literally felt a twinge in my gut that mm-hmm. just didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And
because God is love.
Exactly.
So if God is love, and the essence of God is love, and we are all of God,
yes.
How did we mess this message up so completely, like a PR campaign where we're cutting and pasting Bible verses to get our agenda out there? And how is it that enough people aren't talking about this on a regular basis?
That's a very good question. It's about 2,000 years of history with that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got off of Jesus's message, and that's my thing right now in retirement. I knew my agenda, if you have it, would be to clarify what his message was and what his why he came here.
Mm-hmm. His message to you is what?
His message to me is to get in touch with my own divinity, mm-hmm. the Christ within me, to become more and more at one with that, and to live from that place, so that everything you say comes out of that place, everything you think comes from there, everything you do comes from there, how you respond to everything in your daily life comes from that place. You literally live from that place. So I like to talk about changing your address,
mm-hmm.
and recentering
right
back to that, what some call the seat mm-hmm. of self.
And like you talk in your book that you're writing and addressing to your grandson, Soren, which is just mm-hmm. so sweet, in that place of coming from love, that sort of that feeling, that God-like presence is sort of like the dog that's waiting. We keep going out, mm-hmm. but God stays in. The dog is there for you waiting when you get back. You go ahead. You do what you have to do. You mm-hmm. go to the store. I'll be right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meister Eckhart. Great German mystic.
Master Eckhart, yes, yes.
Yeah, said, it's God who stays at home. It's we who go out for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that a lot. But God stays right there just waiting for us to come home. And the truth is always there waiting for us, doesn't judge you. It just waits patiently for you to
If memory serves, I was a convenient Christian. I mean, I'll admit it. And I'm a spiritual person, but we started off Lutheran. You'd be proud, Tim. my grandfather was a Lutheran pastor as well on my father's side. And then we moved over to Episcopalian with my dad's second wife. And then by the third wife, we were just congregational. We just did Easter and Christmas Eve, you know, that was about it. Yeah. But the whole vibe of my belief system was that you want to treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Mm-hmm. And I got that takeaway very, very hugely each time. But then I would go out on the street and you'd see people be mean to people Monday through Saturday, but then they'd apologize for it on a Sunday. Like, oh, everything's okay if we just do that. Mm-hmm. But then I would sit in Sunday school and they would give these, you know, these verses, and it was always the same five or six lessons. And I would say, but that's a really big book. What else is in that book? And then when I realized that that book was put together decades after Jesus actually died, right, and that there were missing gospels and all of these things, the historian in me just started seething. But I always remembered the story, and I believe it was the Last Supper, and you could correct me if I'm wrong here, Tim, where Jesus washed everyone's feet. Was that he washed the disciples' feet before the Last Supper?
Yep.
And that's an act that is done by the lowest of low servants, like the daughters of the slaves, kind of, back then, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And he was doing this to show that this is who he is. He's you, he's me, he's that slave, he's that sinner, quote, sinner, he's the sick person, he's the woman, he's the king, he's all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that message to me says everything, but yet we don't remember that.
Exactly.
We separate, and especially the Catholic Church, they put the, you know, no women allowed, and you got to have this, you know, can't go to the Vatican showing a shoulder. You know, there's all this pomp and circumstance that forgets that Jesus was washing dirty feet before the Last Supper.
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah, and
so I did remember that correctly.
Good for you.
Okay,
good for you.
That's
points.
1 point.
yeah, I mean, you know, Christianity really began as a lifestyle. And we turned it, him, into a belief system where you believe things about God. You believe things about things outside of you. I think Jesus was all about the heart and going within and living from that place. So it's a lifestyle where you live from your oneness with God.
And he started preaching because his people, the Jewish people, he felt were getting away from their true north, their God heart.
Exactly.
It wasn't that he said he wanted to start a religion and we're going to call it Christianity. He was a Jewish man who was preaching at the age of 12. At least that's the earliest memory we have of him preaching, correct?
Yeah.
And wowing people with his grace, speaking from the heart.
Yeah, exactly. So someone walks up to him and says, what's the most important thing? And so he summarizes the whole Jewish scriptures by saying, love God, love your neighbor as yourself, period. And the as yourself part is rarely talked about in the church, and that's really important. I don't believe he's talking about loving yourself. What he's saying is loving your neighbor as yourself, seeing your neighbor as you.
You.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You are me, and I am you in a very real way. So once we can look and see our oneness, that completely changes everything. And I've been doing a lot of thinking lately about labels.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn Mace calls it the archetype. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at how we are living with each other, our politics, everything is determined by labels.
Right.
We labels of country, ethnicity, color, race, religion, gender.
Economic status.
Economic status.
Right.
All those are labels. And I've come to know through Echo and my study the last few years.
Echo Bodine, who's the one who introduced us. We were in Minnesota and she connected the dots because you had reached out to her. Go ahead. We'll get to that in a minute.
Exactly. But those labels that we attach to are just roles that our soul has chosen to come here and play. Shakespeare literally had it right.
All of life is a play.
Yeah.
And we're just the players.
Just one giant play here. Mm-hmm. And we're playing these parts.
Right.
But they're not the real us. And if we could see beyond the labels and understood that underneath those, we're all the same divine energy.
Right. Okay, so there is a key. We're all the same divine energy. In my second book, I'm Spiritual Dammit, I meet a Roman Catholic priest who tells me that there are lots of references in the Bible where mediumship is used, and not only just used, but it's okay, right? It's used by leaders. And I can't remember the quote exactly, and it's in my second book, but he tells me that there was a leader that had banned mediumship completely because they were scared of the seers, right, and the gypsies and all that. But then he was needing guidance himself, Solomon.
Yeah.
Or Saul?
Saul and Samuel.
Saul and Samuel, thank you. All right, you tell it then, because you obviously know it better than I.
Yeah, he's looking for wisdom, and Samuel gives him a reading. It's a reading, and he tells him kind of what to do and what's going on, and he values it.
Yeah.
And it's respected, and we lose sight of that. There are a lot of verses in the Old Testament that says don't go to one.
Right.
But those are written in the context of replacing God.
With a psychic.
Yeah.
Or with a seer or a gypsy.
Right.
Right. Putting something bigger than God. Giving it, like we talk about those labels again, giving it, you know, a promotion.
Right. Okay. And Samuel is doing what he's doing in service to God. So you meet with someone like an Echo Bodine, and it's so clear that they do what they do in service to God and love for God. And that's what attracted me, you know, to her and helped me trust her.
And you had seen her on TV and radio locally in Minnesota, where you hail from.
Yeah, about 3 years into my ride here, I started to get the message inside to go see a psychic.
Right.
And I thought, what? I'm a pastor. You can't do it. But up to that point, every time I listened to my inner voice, it led me to wonderful things. It was always right.
Right.
It always expanded me.
Right.
So I went. And because I'd seen her and heard her, and I introduced myself to her, and I said, I was a Lutheran pastor, and I read a couple of her books, and I loved them, and would you be willing to have coffee with me? And after I picked her up off the floor, she just couldn't believe it.
Right. Was the book that really resonated for you?
Echoes of the Soul,
yeah.
Yeah, and I think what happens to us when we die.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we got together for coffee, and we did so for 2-hour coffees every 2 weeks for a year. And everything she was telling me about the other side, and about, it was just my truth fork was just humming.
So what do you think happens in your construct of being a pastor for 35 years? Is there a heaven? Is there a hell? Is there an inferno? Do we have to worry about it? Or do you believe, like Echo and a lot of intuitives believe, that our afterlife experience kind of reflects, you know, everything that we put out, we feel again, there's a life review, that kind of thing. But if you're super religious, then you can go into that floor, and you know, there's a Buddhist lounge over there, and there's a Catholic school over there, and there's, you know, what happens to the, you've even interviewed, was it atheists or agnostics or all of them? But so what do you think happens?
I think that's all right on. In the church, we don't give any answers, really, to what that is like. There's vague images of going to be with God. Actually, if you look at the Orthodox understanding of our Lutheran understanding, what happens when you die, there's two messages. You go somewhere, or nothing happens until Jesus returns again. So that's not, I never found that to be very satisfying.
Well, they're still waiting.
Like we're on hold for 2,000 years.
Right.
No, I think immediately the spirit, the energy passes over, and the journey continues. It makes so much sense to me that we continue on at the same level that we are when we leave, that we're not instant perfection.
Right. That we're still learning when we get over there.
We're still learning. There's still much more to learn. And that continues on the other side. And when we, if we're ready, then we come back and try it again. It's, you know, it's absurd to think that we just got this one little shot.
Well, do you think, Lost in Translation, you talk about that a lot, too, because there's different translations in things mm-hmm. taken out of context, right? Mm-hmm. Certain verses when there's an entire backstory that leads up to that action. Yeah. So with this Jesus returning, could it have been lost in translation that mm-hmm. that just means we need to find the Jesus within, returning within all of us?
Yeah.
And when we get that, that is the next coming?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that's, and that's completely changed for me. The other
stuff, didn't used to be your belief system?
It was, because I bought the Orthodox mm-hmm. story, and I was, you know.
You were waiting for him to come through the living room? Like, yeah. What were you waiting for?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Waiting for coming down from the sky or something.
Yeah.
But no, the second coming is the Christ being renewed within us. Mm-hmm. And it's always a second and a third and a fourth and a 20th coming. It's that becoming awakened within us. And that's what it is.
That's what it is.
Uh-huh. And so I love what I've learned about the other side, because that makes so much more sense to me than just, you know, some point we instantly turn into perfection and we sit around and play harps all day
mm-hmm.
singing praises to Jesus, because he didn't have any interest in that when he was here.
Right. We don't know. He could have been great at the harp. We just don't have any record of it. And that's the other thing. We don't have records. We don't have these, you know, things were chiseled onto templates back then and told in story form. And I always say this, and I've said it in many podcasts, I know how my family messes up a story after 20 minutes.
Exactly.
It's like a bad game of telephone.
Yep.
So how do we expect that 80 plus years, how many years is your belief system that the Bible was put together after Jesus died? Because I know there's one version that says 60-some years, another says 100 plus, somewhere between 60 and 100?
Yeah, I think you're talking about 30 to 70 or 80, generally speaking. John, the Gospel of John was probably put together last one about 100
after
AD,
he died.
Maybe 110.
Mm-hmm. And how many missing Gospels do you think there are?
There are dozens.
Dozens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're discovering more and more in caves and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really interesting.
What's one of the ones that's percolated lately?
To read.
Yeah.
Well, the Gospel of Thomas.
Doubting Thomas.
Yeah. Well,
is that what that's where they got that from? Wasn't he sort of like, I don't know, guys, I wouldn't go in there. Wasn't he that guy?
I'm not sure if it was written by him.
Okay, got it.
We're not sure about a lot of these ones we have, what they were written, who they're written by exactly.
Mm-hmm. But what is the Gospel of Thomas' essence?
Well, Jesus comes off a lot different.
Really?
In the Gospel of Thomas. I mean, he's doing some weird things.
Like what?
Well, like,
like riding a motorcycle? What's he doing?
He'll make a bird out of some clay and then animate it, and then it goes off into the air.
Mm-hmm.
One time he gets upset with somebody he's playing with and orders him dead, kills him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's not really the...
That's a little misinterpretive, wouldn't you say?
The playground Jesus.
I
know.
So Jesus had a bad day in the Gospel of Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah, but he says stuff that's really profound in there. Says how does he word it? If you speak the truth which is within you, it will save you. If you do not speak the truth within you, it will destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
And I really resonate with that, because we all know that thing inside of us that needs to be said, and we need somebody to hear it. And when that doesn't happen, you feel it inside. It doesn't feel very good.
Right.
It destroys you. But when you get it out and you are heard, then you can literally feel your soul expand. Mm. And we've all got those truths inside of us that need to be said.
Which is why you think that you were facing depression at the age of 40 and not feeling any different from the meds, because you weren't, part of your truth wasn't being spoken.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Your authentic voice was slightly muffled. You were still preaching and inspiring, but there was a little morsel that wasn't quite right.
Right. And I looking back now, I understand, I think, the essence of what was bothering me.
Yeah.
Is that we weren't telling people what they are, who they are. We were talking all about God.
What they aren't and what they aren't doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That we were talking. We're telling them that they're sinners.
Mm-hmm.
And we were telling everything. The reason I'm titling my book to my grandson, "You Are Love," messages from the heart of a grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to know. We in church or religious world says that God is love.
Right.
We'll tell people they are loved.
Mm-hmm.
We'll tell people that they should love, but we don't tell people that they are love, that their essence is love. That's their true nature.
Right.
People need to know that.
Right.
They don't need to be told that they're sinners because they're not. What we identify as sin, this list of things that we're not supposed to do, we tend to do those things when we walk away from our truth.
Well, what would you say then to somebody who's a murderer, right? I know mm-hmm. there's people out there that have had incredible loss, and they mm-hmm. lost a child because of a murder, right? Mm-hmm. How can they then find love in that person that caused this pain? That's where some people, I think, get wrapped up in the judgment, right? And then
right.
they want to point fingers, and they want to be
right.
in grief, and they want to be a victim
yep.
and angry, and they go to church to get some salvation, and mm-hmm. they want to scream at their, you know, at yep. those that wrong them. How do you get them out of that hole?
Yeah, I've been in situations like that as a pastor.
I'm sure.
And people respond to that quite differently. But my experience has been that those who know their own true nature, who know their own divinity, their own love within themselves, are able to eventually, it takes a while to get there, but eventually see it in that person.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand early on, they still have all the feelings of anger, whatever, but they understand early on that that person has just lost themselves. They're lost.
Right. Nobody would hurt or kill another if they had love inside of them.
And they do have love inside of them.
They forgot
They just forgot. Mm-hmm. They weren't told, you know, what's their story? What's mm-hmm. their backstory? What was their life like growing mm-hmm. up? And those who know within themselves can see it, you know, in other people.
Sure.
And that's why we need to wake people up, so that they know who they are and they can be who they are out in the world. Yeah.
So if somebody is born and they don't have a loving childhood, you talk very openly about being raised Lutheran in a mm-hmm. family, and a wonderful family, and there was love in the congregation, and, you know, this family was sat in that pew, and, you know, some people didn't have parents. Some people mm-hmm. grew up in foster homes, you know, so they have to really find their inner GPS. They have to
yeah.
find that morsel inside that they can grow or nurture themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How would you encourage them to find this piece of self-love? What can they do to get there if they don't have the construct of a loving family like you did?
Right. Those people are around you, I would tell them. Just keep looking.
Mm-hmm.
And when you find them, say, hey, I want to hang with you.
Right.
Help me get to know you. I need to know you.
Mm-hmm.
Find any way you can to be around them. They are there. They actually are all around you.
Mm-hmm. You mean those who have the inner love?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it rubs yeah. off after a while.
It rubs off after a while. And I've seen kids come to church who had nothing like that in their lives. But somehow there's something in them that brought them to the church, or brought them, they came with a friend.
Right.
Yeah, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Like they came here with it, which they did, but they're aware of it. They're conscious
yeah.
of it. Or they just know that they know they need something.
Right.
They latch on to somebody who seems like they're, you know, kind of grounded.
Mm-hmm.
And just hang with those people.
Right.
They're there.
That's right. Well, you teach at the center in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. At Echo Bodine Center, about misconceptions in the Bible and some things about the gifts of the Spirit. Give us some of that for our listeners who haven't been to any of your talks. Some of the, maybe the research behind what's really in the Bible about intuition and the gifts of the Spirit that would help people embrace their own inner intuition.
Well, for example, I'm teaching a class this fall on the Lord's Prayer. But I'm teaching the Aramaic version of the Lord's Prayer. So everybody that comes to the center is pretty Jesus-centered, but they know there's more to him than what the church is.
Right. They're big fans, but they want to know the backstory. Yeah, okay.
So the Aramaic, I love it because it brings you to a whole different place than the English Lord's Prayer does. It changes your whole understanding of what prayer is. Traditionally, we think of prayer as me talking to God, telling God what I want God to do.
Right, right. Your to-do list for God.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, heal this person, give me this job.
Right. Mm-hmm. Pay this bill, pay this blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And really what not just church people, but myself, we all struggle with this, but we want in God a force who will give us what we think we need and keep away from us the things that we don't need,
right?
Don't want. But the Aramaic Lord's Prayer quickly gets you into a whole different world. What it does is it frees you from the bondage of this small, separate, fearful self that we create once our soul hits shore here.
What is it? Can you say it?
Separate self?
No, the Aramaic Lord's Prayer.
Well, the first word, you know, Abum, our Father, in Aramaic is Abum. And it means our common source of being. So right away,
boom,
you're pulled out of yourself,
right?
Which is a great thing.
Yes.
And you're pulled into something much bigger than yourself and realize that you are a small part of something grand. And
so again, one of those lost in translation. How many of those are in the Bible?
Exactly.
Okay. What's another saying in that prayer?
Who art in heaven. Hallowed. I love the hallowed because in Aramaic, the word means much more than what we would think of as holy. It means to sweep away or to unclutter.
Ah.
So what we're praying for is to lose ourselves. To find ourselves. Jesus taught the one who loses himself will find themselves. That great paradox. But we're taught to lose ourselves in the grandness, in the ocean, in the divinity of God, to let go of our cluttered minds, our fearful minds, our thoughts, our obsessions, our endless, endless opinions about everything. To be clear, to find this open space within us for the nature of God to dwell. And just be with that.
Wow.
And listen to that. And allow that to shape you. And the next part of the prayer is, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. So we're creating this space within us. Out of that space comes God's kingdom. Through us.
Once we got rid of the clutter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Through God's will is done, then in and through us. So so really, all of a sudden, life has nothing to do with you.
Right. Right.
And in that living.
And allowing
and not getting in the way, you will find all the things that you were looking for in the first place.
Give us this day our daily bread.
Yeah, exactly. So Jesus teaches, seek first the kingdom. When he's talking about worrying.
Right.
He said, all these things you worry about, what good does it do you?
Right.
Seek first the kingdom, what God's trying to do in and through you and the world around you. And all these things you worry about will be taken care of. So you don't have to come to God anymore with all of your requests. You know.
You mean they were doing it back then too?
Yeah, they were. They were because... the other side is always telling you it's okay. You know, we got this. We got it covered.
Right.
That's the constant message I get from the other side now that I'm on this journey that I get, plus the messages that Echo and other mediums give me. The constant message is it's going to be okay. It's okay.
Right.
Now, that said, I need to say You know, we pray a lot for other people.
Sure.
And that's because we love them. If someone you dearly love is very sick, of course you want them to get well.
Sure.
And you need to get that out.
Right.
You need to talk to God and say, you know, I want this person well.
It's okay to have a want in a prayer.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. But now I got that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they already knew that.
Yeah.
But I got that out there now.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's be together in this hallowed, uncluttered space.
And forgive us our trespasses. How is that different in the Aramaic?
Well, that's interesting, because just the other day, Echo was telling us, I was in a class of hers, and she was saying, I see these cords connected to people. We're talking about forgiveness.
Right.
And I literally see cords, strands, connecting people who have not forgiven people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the Aramaic means. Loosen the cords that bind us.
Forgive us. Wow.
So there are literally cords.
Wow.
That bind. And when we forgive,
the cords cut.
The cords cut. Mm-hmm. And we're no longer bound to that other person, and they're not bound to us. Mm-hmm. And we are free. You know, and everybody's heard this before probably, but, you know, when you forgive, it's really for you.
Yeah. And lead us not into temptation is not about cheating on your spouse. What's that one in Aramaic?
That is a horrible translation.
Okay. How did we mess that one up?
I mean, how ridiculous it is it for us to have to try to talk God into not leading us into temptation? That's really what we're praying for.
Right.
Don't lead me into temptation. Mm-hmm. This Bible's clear. God leads no one to temptation.
Right.
It's a terrible translation. What it really means is save us from the time of trial when we are tested.
Mm-hmm.
Help us there to not go to the places that harm us, and then in turn we harm others.
Guide us on the right path.
On the right path.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's the kind of stuff
deliver
I talk
us from
about.
Evil. What's that? I'm sorry, I'm going through each line in my head now.
No,
deliver
true.
Us from evil.
Say it was from the evil one.
Uh-huh.
That's actually where the prayer stops in the Gospels.
Save us from the evil one.
Yeah. The for thine is the kingdom, power, and glory.
Yeah.
That was an add-on.
Oh, of course. There was an editor that just got chatty.
Exactly. So the Catholics actually had it right.
Yeah, they did.
They did.
Don't tell the Episcopalians.
No. They always stop with it was from the evil one.
Oh, wow.
And that's the way it is in the Gospels.
Okay.
So my point is, Jesus' whole understanding of prayer and of life is alignment. Prayer is alignment. And every day is getting up and aligning, realigning yourself with the flow. I love to call it the flow.
Right.
There's a flow. 6 days ago, I was standing near a babbling creek in Yellowstone Park.
Mm.
And, you know, the water rushing and hitting the rocks and listening to that for 2-3 hours. And we know what that's like, and that sound and the water hitting the rock. And when it hits a rock, it moves a certain way, and then it goes another way. And the flow goes where it goes. The flow is already there. You don't have to create the flow. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. But everything in that creek was trusting the flow. It was just going where the flow went.
True.
And the flow is good.
Yeah.
The flow, the divine flow, is always taking you to the place of your highest good. It may be a rough ride, mm-hmm. like a creek can be.
Yep.
But it will take you to where you need to go.
Right.
You can trust the flow. I just love the flow.
And, you know, truly being guided to people to help you in that flow, you know, Echo being one of them for you in your journey, I think mm-hmm. you and I meeting, where it's a wonderful continuing in flow for me, especially when I'm questing always about the religious texts and wanting to confirm that by interviewing a medium or psychic, I'm not going to some inferno, which a lot of people in my very religious let's see, how can I say this because it's in a podcast and someone might listen to it. There are some people that I know who are born-again Christians that would be very opposed to that belief system, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And that's very Jesus-y, right? Judging and not talking to you because of it. Yeah. But I digress. So I have to get to a place of forgiving where they are because they're there in fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also knowing that interviewing too many people with a gift, so to speak, is really kind of giving up your power. We all do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whether we're at our job and we just give all our power to the boss,
mm-hmm.
or in our family, we give all our power to our spouse or to our, you know, the relative, brother, aunt, uncle, whatever it is. I think we all need someone to show us when we have basil in our teeth, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't see everything. It's great to have people reflect back to you. But to always count on someone else for the wisdom, I was getting stuck in that for a while.
Yep.
Calling intuitives for everything, you know, before I would go grocery shopping. You know, Echo used to joke that she would use the Ouija board before they went grocery shopping when they were kids. So if we put ourselves out of the driver's seat too often,
mm-hmm.
we forget that we have the answers within.
Exactly.
And you talk about being in Yellowstone for days without any, you know, noise. I was in rural Maine with my uncle for days with no cell service, no internet, no television. And I spent one entire day. They decided to go to the state park and I was like, I'm going to stay here. And I listened to the water. I listened to the wind. I was going to read, but then I decided to just listen. And my spidey senses were so tapped in. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, gosh, what if I did this more often?
Yeah.
And I want everybody out there listening to make a point to unplug somehow, some way each day, even if it's telling. Because I notice everybody, they're driving, they're on their phones. They're at dinner, they're on their phones. People aren't unplugging. So I just feel to get back to source, to get back to that Jesus love heart, that God love heart, we have to shut it down. Don't you agree?
Oh, we have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Or we're not going to hear the messages.
Yeah. And there's really nothing out there in the man and the human-made world that encourages us to do that. Encourages us to do just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be very intentional and have a strong desire to do that and constantly remind yourself to do that.
And speaking in tongues, can we talk about that for a minute? I'm sorry, but how is that okay, but mediumship isn't? I mean, people are standing up going, blah, 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 blah. They're doing this, I'm sorry, crazy stuff, but that's okay because it's God-inspired, but yet mediumship is not. So I tell people all the time, use discernment, right? If your truth fork is not resonating in a hum level and somebody is, quote, speaking in tongues and they're going to save you because they're finding Jesus, then, you know, just listen to your inner GPS.
Exactly.
Same with using anybody, whether you go to a doctor or go to a mechanic or a medium or an intuitive. I get people emailing me all the time, who's a good one? You know, people are going to try to take your money. Unfortunately, there's bad people in every category, in every job, USA.
Yeah.
So not everybody is completely in integrity. We know that with people in your line of work, too. Sorry, Tim, but it's true.
It's true.
So use discernment, right?
Yeah.
Turn on your inner voice.
Yeah, just be quiet.
Yeah.
Be still. That's it. That's all you got to do. And it's hard to shut down the voices, but it's all there. It's just there for you, and it may not come right when you think it should, but it'll happen. I've just been amazed at what could come. I'll just say it again. I'm amazed at what I already know.
Yeah.
But nobody told me that.
Right.
We're not telling people that, especially in church.
No.
It's all look to something outside of you, and that's fine. We do that in a way. God is both within and without us, I like to say.
Right.
And
sometimes you need a map to see if you have to turn left at the light or turn right at the light. That's all okay. You can't trust that everything is like, oh, listen to my gut. Which way should I turn?
Yeah.
You do have to have a map sometimes.
Yep.
But what do you know today, Tim, that you never would have embraced 20 years ago?
I know that everyone has what we're talking about.
Intuition?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone has the divine within them, that there's nothing, you don't lack anything. I used to think of spiritual seeking is that we're seeking from a place of lack. We want something that we don't have. What I've learned is it's just the opposite, I believe. What's happening when we seek joy or peace or direction or worth? There is something within us that knows already worth. There is something within us that knows we have value. If we're seeking love, there's something within us that knows love already. And what's that? What's happening is that that's coming up, and that's trying to express itself, what you already have. It's not that you lack it. It's just trying to get your attention.
So really, it's that we don't have to go out and go on a date to feel whole, which a lot of people think they need just that job and just that paycheck and just that guy or that woman. Then it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that we have breath in our lungs, we have a beat in our heart.
Yeah.
And we have source in our soul.
Yeah.
That's it.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, people are constantly trying to feel to be valued or know they have worth. You know, and so we'll look at constant things like, you know, job titles or money or fame or all the things that humans get impressed with. There's something within us that says, I have worth, and we're looking in those to those things, but that's not where, where the worth comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not lack. You already are what you seek. My favorite teacher, Richard Rohr, says, you already are what you seek. Otherwise, you wouldn't be seeking it.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't seek after something you know nothing of. Or, you know, when I speak sometimes, I'll ask people, how many of you here have ever longed for Schlachen von Ugelstein?
Bless you.
And no one will raise their hands, you know, and I'll say, well, probably not, because that's a country that my daughter made up with her youth pastor person, Schlachen von Ugelstein. And nobody longs for that place because they don't know anything about it.
Yep.
But there's something in you that knows about happiness, that knows about joy, that knows about peace, knows about contentment, knows about purpose, meaning.
Right.
And it's just trying to come up. So that's huge, to approach our seeking from a position of having and not lacking. So then we're listening to what's already there,
right,
within us, and we can be whole. You know, I've married hundreds and hundreds, probably, I don't know, 600 couples or something like that over the years. Those couples that come into the relationship, where each one is whole in and of themselves.
Right.
But they're better for being together. You know, those are the ones that make it. If I'm looking to you to complete me, as that saying goes,
right,
this isn't going to work.
No.
Yeah.
And you can tell too, right? Right when they're standing there, have you ever
felt like, oh no, this
is really doomed?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I used to, all my weddings, after about 30, 40 weddings in, I realized nobody comes there to listen to me talk. They're coming for the couple.
Right.
So I started having couples write down for me the reasons they're marrying each other.
Oh.
And I'd read that.
Right.
But then I started noticing a pattern.
Ah.
The pattern was, most of the reasons that people mentioned for marrying each other was what the other person could do for them. She or he makes me laugh. She makes me happy. He's there for me when I come home at night.
Mm-hmm.
All of that kind of stuff makes me feel like I have a place or value.
Right.
Rather than what I can do for you. I'm marrying you because I notice that I make you happy. I notice that I make you a better you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's why you have a relationship with someone.
Right.
I want you to be the best you possible, and which is why we're here.
Right. To be a witness to each other's lives.
Yeah.
And celebrate it.
To be a cheerleader. And if you can turn that around, and I want to be with you because I've noticed that I make you the best you.
Right.
Then you got something.
Then you got a chance.
You got a chance.
Well, that's also, I think, a good dialogue to be having with God.
Exactly.
It's not what God can do for you and what you can do for God. It's just it's witnessing the energy exchange of both.
Exactly. And yeah, the whole business of being a co-creator, that the thing is not talked about in the church.
Right.
And I've fallen in love with it, that I have a responsibility here, that I can't sit there and expect God to do everything, but I am a co-creator of my life with God. I'm paying attention to the signals coming to me all the time, and I'm responding to what's happening, and I'm working with God in tandem with God to create. And I love the image of being a co-creator. That makes me responsible. That keeps me alert.
Yep.
That keeps me engaged in my life.
It keeps you accountable.
Accountable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it brings out the best in me. I've discovered things I didn't even know I had when I realized, oh, some of this is up to me.
Yeah. There's a thought.
Yeah.
What do you wish more people in the pastor, priest community spoke of on a frequent basis? If you had your way in the Church of Tim, what would you speak of frequently, or what do you wish other churches spoke of frequently?
I think pretty much is what I said. I just constantly remind people who and what they are.
Right.
And what they're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And I would talk a lot about oneness. We need to talk a lot about that today. A couple of years before I retired, two separate gatherings I put together called Interfaith Evenings of Peace, and I gathered together Muslims, Hindus, Christians, Jews, people from the Baha'i faith, other traditions. We all came together, and I gave each tradition like 20 minutes, and they all talked about how divine love is articulated in their tradition. So all we talked about was love.
Right.
When we were together. And it was an awesome experience.
And you all had that in common.
Yeah.
You all had that.
Everybody was so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt so connected. And we left so hopeful for the future. We need to talk about our oneness, which religion does not do. It divides. The same God that's in me is in you. We came from the same place. We're going to the same place. We're here for the same reasons. The specifics are different and how we articulate that, but the essence is the same. The purpose is the same. The essence of each of us is the same. We need to talk about that a lot.
Yeah. And the three common threads you talk about this in the major religions, what are those? Mm-hmm. The love and what are
the... Yeah, it's called the perennial tradition.
Uh-huh.
The three major things, there is a divine energy or flowing within and underneath all living things.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is that the soul bears a resemblance to that energy and bears a longing for that energy. And the third common thread is that the goal is union, oneness with that divine force. That's the goal of all existence. All the major religious traditions talk about those three threads in their own unique ways, but it's all there in all of them. And if we would stick with that, look what kind of a world we would
be living in.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I got wonderful friends at the Islamic Center down the road from us and at the Hindu temple. And
So here's your homework, listeners. Go out and have a conversation with somebody who has a completely different belief system that you do and find the through line. Find the similarity and embrace the similar instead of harbor and complain about the difference. And that is the beginning of a bridge that we can build. The ligios, the ligament, as they say in Latin, for religion is out of the ligio ligaments. Let's connect those ligaments.
Mm-hmm.
Stop tearing those ligaments.
Yeah.
And continue the dialogue.
Yeah. We could be we are the... God is the force, the unifying force of everything, and that's our hope.
And don't think you're going to hell for talking to a psychic, because I'm sitting here with a pastor who does it every week.
Do it all the time.
Every 2 weeks. But make sure you do your research, people, and exactly. Don't just put your trust in any old person. That is the other part. My last 3 years has been all about discernment, mm-hmm. a word I never really thought to embrace. So it's a big thing.
When I was taking in new things, I always made sure I would be open to it without rejecting it at first sight. Mm-hmm. I would take it in and feel it. And if it felt like it rang true for me, if my truth fork was humming, then I would go with it more. If it didn't, and not everything did, then I didn't pursue it any further. But you first have to take it in and just let it resonate, let it feel. And I've learned a lot from that. Rather than we're constantly rejecting things, bam, right away, because of what we previously knew or heard. I refused to do that, and I trusted things that were coming to me. Mm-hmm. But you got to let it in and let it percolate. Yep.
So write the book, will you?
Okay.
I'm going to get emails after this goes. It's going to be like, when's Tim's book coming out? So we will have to keep them posted. But if you want to learn more about Tim, you don't have a website. You don't have a Facebook you want to announce. You don't have a book out yet.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be clamoring, so.
Well, I got an email address.
Do you want to put it out there?
I do.
Okay, then. Put it out there.
I'd love to chat with people about this stuff.
Good. All right. Your funeral. Go ahead.
It is. Should I really be doing this? Yeah.
You know what? Here's what I recommend. If you do put this out there, then you'll get another email for your personal, and this can be your now communicative with the community. Because once the book comes out, I'm just here to tell you, you're going to have dialogue with your readers. I do it all the time, and I love it.
Okay.
So you're going to need to have dialogue with those listeners that are going to want to just know there might be some folks that want to tussle. Right? Because have their...
I know.
That's why I was so excited when a Roman Catholic priest told me that I was okay. I feel like I'm a Roman Catholic priest certified now.
Okay.
And I don't go to a Catholic school or Catholic church. That's pretty great.
Well, I don't... I mean, it's the only way I have at the moment.
Okay.
So should I do this?
He's looking at his wife, everybody, in case you want to know. Lovely wife, Dory. Dory, this is your call. He's about to put himself out there. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay.
What is your truth fork?
What does your truth fork say? How's it feel?
Okay. My email is Tim Tingblad, TimTeng, B as in boy, LAD, at Comcast.net.
Okay, Tim.
There it is.
There it is. It is done. And so it is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will look forward to many more dialogues with you. I hope you keep me versed on all the steps that are involved with your story getting out there in a more broad sense. I'm your cheerleader, and you know that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I've got this stuff to do. I know I do.
Yeah.
And I want to get it out. Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, you're teaching at the center, so that's important. Yep. Center for Intuitive Development in Minneapolis. So that's at the center. I believe it's on Chicago Avenue, ironically, in Minneapolis. So that's very easy for people to find. They can find your schedule there. You're there seasonally, I would say, right?
Yep.
Okay. So that's a good way for people to find you who are in the Midwest if they want to head on up there as well. Yeah. And we want to get you here also to the Wilmette Theater for Conversations with Weigel.
That'd be fun.
So that's going to happen as well. So stay with JenWeigel.com. And click on the gigs tab, and hopefully a coming soon event with Tim will be on the calendar. Tim, thanks for doing all that you do, especially your service to getting truth out there and reminding people to turn on their heart light. I am so grateful for all you do.
Well, thank you, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Everybody out there, treat others the way you'd like to be treated. And please, by all means, stay spiritual, damn it.